The Shortcode Podcast is a proud member of the MedEd Media Network. Inspiration, information, and guidance on your journey to medical school and beyond at mededmedia.com.
Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcode Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast, a production of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Etler, a fact which would be important if it weren't for the presence of my medical student co-hosts. Say hello to Gabe Conley.
Hey.
Just a couple feet away, Claire Castaneda.
Hello.
Over there, it's Dabin Choi.
Hi.
And I see Eric Kneller yonder as well.
Oh, what's up, podcast people?
Thanks for coming today, everyone. Appreciate your taking the time after what I'm sure was a busy morning of studying, getting ready for your next test, taking a class, whatever it is you did. What were you doing?
CTE lecture was interesting.
It was. I enjoyed that.
CTE.
Yeah.
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Mm-hmm.
You were so close.
Yeah. Yeah. Encephalopathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always a good time. CTE.
The professor there, that guy's just amazing.
Yeah.
We all love him.
Yeah.
We love him.
Little bias though. A little bit of a football. A little too much of a football fan for maybe a CTE lecture.
That is the problem.
Well, he readily disclosed his football fan.
No, I'm messing around. I think he was really fair about it.
Yeah.
But it was very much in the context of like the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. Yeah. But I do think it's important to talk about the fact that the NFL gets, and rightfully so to some degree, but the NFL gets so much heat from the media about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like it's kind of a losing battle too. It's like
So it's cool to put things into context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just know that the system that makes football so important to the American public is destroying the minds of its players.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I don't like football.
Yeah.
I can't stand sports in general. So I'm really the wrong person. Everybody who's listened to the show knows this. I can't stand it. I'm not inclined to give football the benefit of the doubt. Just because I could, you know, like I could live or die. I could go my entire life without watching football and never being like, God,
I miss that football.
Really miss something.
I do feel like we can come up with a better game. Like, it's such a.
Like what, Claire?
So long and confusing.
All sports are long and confusing. It's like they set out to make, like even baseball, which is the most straightforward.
That's what I was thinking.
Of sports.
Baseball.
They're like, oh, we got to have this rule that, I don't know, like, there's probably rules.
We have so much technology these days. This is a weird nerdy thing I've been doing lately, but
I've kind of gotten
into watching people play video games on YouTube
You've been watching Ninja.
Yes. What's the website?
Twitch.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, but I know.
Oh, he plays Fortnite,
yeah.
This is what my son does, and I'm like, you know, you could be playing those games.
Yeah, but it's so much better to watch someone really
He's
good
way better
it.
Than I'll ever be. So.
Because when you do it, you kind of suck, and then you don't play.
No, I totally get it.
Someone's really good.
You pretend like you're the good player.
Do you guys watch?
Not like frequently, but yeah, I kind of know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do actually get this. I mean, I'm giving him a hard time. But I do actually, because I watch YouTube videos of people making things, and I'm like, oh, that's really, I love that. I love watching that.
Yeah.
And, you know, my kids are like, you're never going to make those things. No,
damn.
But there's something very relaxing about watching somebody do something that's and do it well.
I think it's
so weird. And like, yeah, that's become a whole like cultural thing that we do now.
Right.
Everybody's got something they love to watch.
Right. You know what? It makes me want to say what I watch.
Pornography. We know.
No comment, but I do. I want to. What I was going to say is there are really cool YouTube videos about like things being crushed by a hydraulic press.
Oh, yeah.
Those are amazing.
Absolutely.
Ooh,
they crush everything.
Really
the hydraulic
fun.
Press channel.
Yes, they're all Russian, I think, which is adds to the, you know, it adds something to the videos. That's crushed me. And they're so excited.
Awesome.
And it's so cool.
Yeah. I like those videos too, except they're crushing like iPhones and iPads. I'm like, that's
what?
They're crushing everything.
No.
Well, it's like the Blender guy, kind of.
Yeah,
more controlled.
I don't think the Ukrainian
that made, I don't know, I feel like made the genre famous. I don't think the Ukrainian like crushes iPhones usually unless they're old or something.
Okay.
Usually crushes things like, I don't know, bullets.
Yeah, it's usually things you wouldn't think would be easy to get crushed, right. But this hydraulic press is up to it.
Diamonds. I think there was a diamond. He crushed a diamond.
Yeah.
He crushed a diamond? I thought diamonds were the hardest like metal.
But they're very brittle.
Something like that.
That would have like crushed the press.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, it's a good battle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I recommend it. Go watch Hydraulic Press.
They put it in slow motion because I love that.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out that paper, when crushed, can explode. So
that's really fun.
Yeah. Guys, speaking of doing relaxing things, med students and pre-meds take a lot of tests. In fact, from a certain perspective, all of medical school is some sort of weird psychological test. What we all know that tests aren't all about knowledge, right? They're also partly about how the test taker responds to taking the test, right? Anxiety, please confirm my supposition.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Anxiety is a common problem for test takers. So today's question I have for you is, how do you manage test anxiety? What do you do anything conscious? Do you have test anxiety? Is it not a problem for you? What's the deal? Because I would be terrified every time I took a test, and it would probably mean that I do terribly on it. Do you guys not have this problem? Has this been bred out of you before at med school?
I would say for big exams, I definitely feel the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then for the start of med school, I felt anxiety for the first couple of exams because I wasn't sure really what to expect. And I think I felt that for the first few like undergrad big exams. But I think now I only get real anxiety for like really huge exams. Like I got for the MCAT and probably will for STEP, hopefully not.
I have anxiety for step one. And
it's
2 years from now. And I don't Everyone really get test anxiety. Anxiety. Yeah.
I wonder if
that one makes
anybody
anxious.
Is like, oh, step one. Meh.
Big deal. Oh my gosh.
Probably
yeah.
not. Yeah.
Well, because I'm kind of like that in the sense that, well, I'm not going to worry about it until I really have to particularly prepare for that one. I don't know. I looked at like kind of things week to week. So like,
and you still haven't started preparing.
Exactly.
You're not doing prep.
Now the anxiety's building.
You haven't been reading for state.
But I think I probably operate on just like a slightly less basal level of stress than a lot of other people do. So
you seem like a very chill kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty I'm pretty like even keeled, like kind of go with the flow.
Man, I admire that because I think people think I'm even keeled, but in truth, like I might just go off on you any second.
Very stable. So, Eric,
did
you get anxiety for like the first few med school exams?
Yeah, I did. But I actually think like the anxiety actually kind of probably sometimes will make you do a little better.
That's interesting.
I can't agree with that.
I kind of like, you know, that fight or flight kind of instinct kind of like kicks in a little bit, and you kind of like
and you choose
a little
to
more
fight.
Hyper aware. Yeah, try to fight or just.
Your flight doesn't do any student any good.
Because you flee, what do you do?
Right, you fail, and then, you know, you might as well not have. Do you have do you have any tricks? Or, and like, when the anxiety is...
I feel like you're just that type of person.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the... I think it's just in...
Like a chill person.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I just...
It depends on who you are. I don't get anxious that much.
Same.
It's like whatever. I studied.
So
I
picked the perfect question for such a friggin' chill group of people.
Okay.
I have to say, I mean, like, if someone around me is super anxious, I get more anxious.
But if
that happens, like, I just leave. And I don't know.
That's easy to do.
I'm really good at making other people anxious by saying stuff like, oh, you haven't done the quiz yet. And it's just for fun.
Yeah.
Make fun of them.
That's nice.
Because it's really fun. You guys should try sometimes too. When you're next like really neurotic person and then just like a little bit of push will do it. I sound very evil, but
you're sick.
You do, yeah.
I do it out of love for my friends.
Yes.
And it usually like makes them kind of relax afterwards. Like,
you like ratchet it up and then afterwards they sort of
relax. Yeah. I'm like, I haven't done it either. Like, don't worry. You know, try to make them relax.
Yeah, also I would add that like my sleep has been an issue for me in the past, just in general, and sometimes that can be an issue before exams.
Mm-hmm.
But I've started meditating and stuff, and my sleep has gotten so much better.
Ooh.
If you have sleep issues, look into meditation.
Mm-hmm. What do you What do you do? What specifically does that mean?
That's a big question that you have to figure out. Basically, meditation can mean a few things. For me, it's just deep breathing without just me. It's just me focusing on my breathing for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Literally trying not to think about anything else.
Yeah, sounds very relaxing.
Deep breaths. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me, meditation is kind of like, since I go to church, I use meditation time as kind of like a praying time.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about like, oh yeah, I pray for like myself and others,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because good people pray for others.
Oh, okay. I was thinking you were particularly talking about that. I pray for Dave.
But that like, you're like...
Yeah, one of the tricks that I found, was suggested to me, was to go to the freezer, grab a couple of ice cubes, hold them in your hands as tightly as you can.
Ooh, that's fun.
Let it hurt. Okay. Oh. So this sounds very masochistic, but let it hurt.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, let it hurt until you can't hold them anymore, and then drop them.
Mm. Yeah.
And it distracts you completely almost from whatever was, you can't think about anything else. You know? So I'm not advocating that you should stab yourself in the eye as a way to get rid of anxiety, but you know, if you
bleed it out.
Yes.
No.
If you can, distract yourself in some way, and it's really good because there is literally like when you're holding it tightly in your hands, there's nothing else you can think about.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's something to be said for just like running straight into it too, like that.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't say that I'm like a truly high anxiety person. I think I just have the normal level, but like when you're just like, I'm anxious about this test, and you're like, why am I anxious? And you're like, because I could just not do good, and then I'll mm-hmm. be a point off of honors, and then you're like, the consequence of that is absolutely nothing long term.
Yeah.
And then you like go back to your stuff, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna let this question, like last test, I totally let the questions about like what color tops go with each tube.
Oh, sure.
I skipped out on that, and I was like, I'm gonna focus on pharmacology.
Was this a fashion question? What color tops?
It's like different tubes in the labs test for different things. Like different tubes go into different machines that test for different things in blood and stuff.
Okay.
Like
it's like, what's purple?
Who knew? I thought you just wrote it on a label and shit.
Purple test tube in this season or something.
The other thing that I've heard works really well is to, or at least is a path towards, you know, getting rid of anxiety, is to sort of recognize moments when you're talking to yourself negatively and then try to turn it around. So if you're going, oh, I'm never going to do well in this test, you know, you could turn it around and say, you know, I'm working really hard to do well on this test.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm having those negative thoughts, I kind of try to, recall like what's happened in the past and like the big picture rather than focusing on like what's affecting me negative right now, because we've come this far and we've had those negative moments, but that's been fine, and then now I'm here. So like thinking about the past, what I've been through, and thinking about like the whole big picture, like, you know, I'm in medical school, I'll probably, you know, make it, hopefully.
And hopefully.
That usually helps me out to get me out of that negative thoughts and just give me just enough power to like move on and go forward, for me at least.
I like to redirect my negative test thoughts just towards my normal negative thoughts and be like, I'm so anxious about the test, and you're like, remember that one thing you said to that person yesterday though, and they reacted kind of weird, and then I'm just like, ah yes, I'm purely distracted now.
Or just like general existential dread.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're
shit.
Like, but one day we will all die. What does that mean?
I feel like it's the Trump White House, man. It's crazy.
It's administration.
Wow, I feel better. There are different tricks as well to taking different kinds of tests, like, you know, the multiple choice test versus the essay.
Yeah.
Do you learn these things before you come to med school, or, you know?
I think so.
To some extent, you learn them
like
better.
You metagame the test, like I do all the time. Like,
so what are these? Let's talk about, what are these tricks? Let's spill the secret sauce here, or something not as gross.
If you're looking at a set of foils and like you kind of know some stuff, but then you look and like four of them have kind of a similar thing in common.
Right, you can get rid of another one. Yeah, stuff like that.
Like that's easy stuff, but. Yeah.
And I would venture to get, you don't go to med school if you're not good at taking standardized, you're not good at taking multiple choice exams, because literally that's how you're assessed in pre-med stuff and all that. So
I guess I'm talking about though some people who are pre-meds who, you know, want to get into med school, but maybe they have, you know, difficulties,
you know, other
taking tests and doing
other
kinds of high pressure situations.
Yeah. You got to learn how to take the test.
I think practice does help.
Exactly.
Yeah. You get better with practice.
It sucks it doesn't feel like it helps, but like, yeah, just like also trying to like replicate, like with like the MCAT, like really like I didn't really start seeing an improvement until I was actually like replicating like the situation of the test, like timing myself and making it more like an endurance test than just like a straight, like, you know, think through everything as, you know, as best as I can. So.
Yeah, I've heard of even people going so far as to replicate the environment in which they will take the test. So
yeah, it's a little crazy, but I can see that helping.
I mean, just to, I don't know, like when you get there, be like, okay, I know what this is about.
Right.
Yeah.
I think for something as high stakes as like an MCAT or whatever, all that extra preparation is nothing. It's not going to be unhelpful. I mean, if anything, it's not going to hurt you. If anything, it just won't be that helpful. But like, if you have the time to go try to replicate the test environment, then I think obviously you should try that.
I've heard the advice, start studying early. I don't know if this applies to med school.
That never works.
I don't like that either.
For MCAT, some people start like 6 months ago. And how could you do that? For me, I wanted to start early, but it just didn't work out. So most of the studying for me got done in like 2 weeks.
Humble brag.
Just gotta do it.
I was able to study for 2 weeks.
For MCAT, I can say you'll never get all the materials that you have to know. I don't think you can possibly know everything. So just, you know, do best you can, and then with practice, and you know, I think practice is really important.
Yeah.
Practice exams rather than learning the materials.
Oh, that would be my number one thing.
Practice questions for sure.
Yeah. Don't just read chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's gonna pull you down to the rabbit hole, and you'll probably never learn everything. It's not possible, I don't think. So yeah. And what were we talking about? I wanted to say something. So for multiple choice questions, I kind of think about what the test makers were thinking when they're making.
Testing point?
The purpose of this question that can help too if you're that kind of person.
Because professors always, or whatever, test makers, they're testing a specific concept.
Right.
Usually.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what are they trying to get?
Like, oh yeah, he said that one thing that one time.
Do you ever get so far to like, well, what? Okay, so. This question is about biochemistry. What was Rubenstein thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of guy is Rubenstein? How will this help me? How can I get into it?
Get into the mind of Rubenstein.
Yeah. If I have time during the test, yeah, why not? Just think about like, what is he trying to get me to do it through this question? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes.
I get it.
Yeah.
So much of it for me too is like, I think part of the learning curve in medical school also is just like learning how you function and like being okay with that. Like if you're a high stress person and you got to start 6 months ahead for the MCAT, that's you. Do
it's
you.
Something
and like
that works out for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, and you don't want to be anxious, but you are like, some people just are, and you just learn to like figure out how you navigate that when it comes to a testing.
You do find
it
yourself.
Sounds like mindfulness.
Yeah.
Being mindful of who you are, and mindfulness meditation is just accepting what you're feeling, don't judge it, and then move on with your day.
It knowing
sounds
what
like
you can
total
live with.
Crap to me.
Yeah, when you put it like that. Like,
I started
hippy-dippy.
It is hippy-dippy. And then like, but I noticed that I was like always tired coming out of tests in the beginning of the year, and I was like stressed about it. And then I started doing this thing that I bummed off of a strategy. Like I've heard a couple other people had been doing ahead of me, and it was like, you go through the test and you never look back, you never bookmark, and you just like don't review your answers anymore. And like, it's so in that moment, instead of like going back and stewing over one question or two questions for 45 minutes of the test, you just like the first time you come to it, you're like, I know this or I don't, and I'm okay with whatever I put right now. And then like you make mistakes, but you make mistakes when you go back and change too. So that for me, like it just made me less tired after and like
saves
less
you, like,
15 angry.
Minutes,
yeah. And then you go in the comment book, and the one that like you find out that the one that you spent so much time on and changed was right the first time. Like,
oh, yeah.
That was so much worse.
Happens. Yeah.
For
that's
me,
that's a horrible feeling.
Like, it's a horrible feeling. And I would just be so upset about it.
I narrowed it down to two answers, and then every time I picked the wrong one. So
And in the grand scheme, it never made a difference. Like,
right.
One strategy, I still ended up with the same grade as I would have with the same strategy. So,
This was one I hadn't heard before. Eat light in the days before your anxiety-provoking test.
So you don't let yak all over your computer?
I guess so. You're not uncomfortable or something?
Eat light.
I don't know. In the days before? I could see like the morning before.
Keto.
I know. It's just going to just be...
I got a prize
on a fast, like right before.
I'm more for eat whatever you want on the exam day because it's stressful with just an exam. So I just eat.
Treat
like,
yourself.
I don't feel guilty. I just eat like, I don't know, Coke and chocolate bar in the morning.
Coke?
Coke, chocolate bar.
Oh, Coke.
Little Coke before the exam.
I thought I was the only one doing that.
Yeah, you
know. Just kidding.
Meet up and dabbing in the bathroom before.
Is there like a scientific background on eating light before when you're feeling anxiety? Like,
Christ if I know.
I mean, you do get like upset stomach when you're like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I guess that's probably like,
right.
The idea, right?
Mm. I don't know. And, you know, yeah. What's eating light? Like fruits? I don't know. That's a vague thing to say.
I think what they mean is
light beer.
don't have heavy meals, right. You know, like okay. Just go for, you know, nutrition. It's all this crazy talk about eating healthy.
And it is garbage.
More hippie nonsense.
Liberal. The libs.
The kale industry.
If I said to you,
big
if
kale.
I gave you my personal advice.
Big kale.
This is my personal advice. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if it's a good idea or not. It just feels right. Decide for yourself what success means to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then avoid, and also just avoid defining it in terms of grades.
Yeah.
Yes, I know that grades, you know, are a metric that is used not by just by you, but by other people to decide your worth. But, you know, if you're chasing after grades, it just seems to me to be like a recipe for anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think I like thinking like big picture wise. It's just one of the many exams you're probably going to be taking in your life. And in grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't really that matter. So usually when I think about that, it kind of calms me down.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know.
It's okay to take time letting go. It's to unlearn whatever, how many years of behavior that you're like, this is me. Who am I without a good grade?
Yeah.
I am nothing.
In my case, I'm just me. Well, listeners, if you have a strategy, if you are an anxious test taker and you have a strategy, even if you're not an anxious test taker and you have a strategy that you could recommend, let's, in the spirit of collaboration, give us a call at 347-SHORT-CT or leave us a message at theshortcoats@gmail.com. You know, share the wealth. Let us know how your trick works for you. Meantime, you might experience some anxiety if you end up at Oregon Health and Science University for medical school, because you're going to have to face a new test, one that looks at how compassionate you are at delivering bad news. So you have to pass this test in order to graduate. The test looks at how you admit to a medical mistake, how you would tell someone a close family member has died, and other common bad news like a cancer diagnosis and all this kind of stuff. According to Dr. Susan Toll, the director of the school's Center for Ethics in Healthcare, her generation of physicians weren't taught how to do this.
Mm.
You know, it just wasn't, it was maybe a skill that wasn't valued, or maybe a skill that they figured, you know, if you're doing this, you already got it. Kind of thing. Maybe it was even something like, oh, this isn't teachable, you know. Mm. So she's been working on standards for communications, ethics, professionalism, that and they're now woven throughout their curriculum in much the same way as we weave basic science and things throughout the curriculum. Mm. It's a test with standardized patients, and apparently not all OSHU students did well, though most of them did fine.
Mm.
What do you guys think? You ready to take a compassion test?
Hell, throw it in.
Yeah.
Throw it in.
What does it measure exactly? Like, how does it?
So you guys have done a little work with standardized patients at this point,
right.
But not in a testing environment, if I understand our curriculum correctly.
Not like where they're measuring really your.
We're not looking for a diagnosis. Yeah, I mean. They test us on physical exam skills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get the feeling it's much like that. So there are certain things that you should do when you're delivering bad news, and there are certain things you shouldn't do.
Like sad eyes. Yes.
Sad.
Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just imagining this is how like the check boxes are from that test. So.
Well, for instance, one of the
offering tissues.
Yeah, there you go. Tissue. Yeah. Good tissue box holding.
Like that, right? Little stuff like that. Yeah. But also big stuff like don't walk into a room and say, you know, I'm sorry, but Dad died.
Yeah.
You know, which. Is a thing that some people do. Like, I don't know if it's a rip the band-aid off kind of technique, or, you know, I'm not sure what the alternative is other than to say, you know, we worked very hard.
Right.
We, you know, there were some problems during surgery. And I'm afraid that you just sort of break it to them a little bit more slowly so that they can absorb the shock. I'm not really sure exactly. Do you guys, but you guys do at some point get instruction on.
Right. We have the emotional patient, like standardized interview session, right? With our PCS, was it? And I think it was helpful. I kind of could see why they were doing these sessions. They want to teach us how to like, deal with those emotional patients and delivering bad news. I'm sure they'll come too.
I think
second year.
I think part of the reason we do that is because, you know, you can tell yourself, okay, I need to be compassionate with patients. But when you're suddenly thrown into a situation where you have to be compassionate, it helps to have thought ahead of time, like what exactly that means. Because you may be feeling very compassionate, but your delivery might suck.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's true.
What's funny is I remember when we were, this came up when I was talking to my sister on the phone about the emotional patient the first time we had it.
Yeah.
And she was telling me that like in some circles, like she's read some stuff that like some people get upset that they like test us on this sort of stuff or like have us like go through this algorithmic, like pass the tissue box sort of thing. Like that is also upsetting to people, which I think is like interesting.
Well, it's upsetting to med students.
Yeah.
I think is what you're saying.
Like some people are like, you're making robots out of people. Like you can't teach people compassion and like, you're just making a formula out of sadness.
Right.
And I was like,
yeah, interesting. Huh.
Can't please anyone.
Yeah.
The way
especially
I,
med students.
Just a way with words. I like it.
Yeah.
I would add, I think the best way for people to show compassion, honestly, I think depends on a given person's personality. So like there isn't one best way, in my opinion, for everyone to do that.
Right.
I think it just involves you getting to know yourself the best, you know, as well as you can, and then trying to effectively communicate your empathy to a patient. And that just looks different when you are with different people. So I'm not sure if I would really like a standardized way of testing way of doing that, because my personality is different from Eric's.
And if it's not what they're looking for, you're going to look like a sociopath on a standardized test. Yeah.
The question for me that the article did not answer was how, to what extent, you know, you're expected to hit standardized things versus to what extent you are given credit for making the standardized patient feel like you did well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is hard to
in delivering that bad news. It's harder to define that second one. So, but you know, if you sort of delivered the news in a compassionate, you know, way and didn't walk in and say, hey, well, we lost Dad. I worked real hard and there's blood all over me to prove it. which was one of the examples cited in the article of someone that this person
that's
knew.
Pretty grisly.
That's, yeah, like,
that is gnarly. Yeah.
Sounds
like, here's proof.
Ta-da. I did my best.
I got this as your dad over here.
Oh, no.
That was in harmony, by the way.
That was good. That was good.
I'm just saying.
Right. But they're probably, by testing them, we're giving us this like assignments to do on how to deal with emotional patients. They're probably just want to give us like options to choose from.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe they're not just, you know, trying to make us robots. It's the one of the words that I cannot pronounce. Robot? They're not trying to make robots.
I believe the correct pronunciation, if you're from the 1950s, is robots.
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 Yeah, I mean, I think the best thing to do in this situation is to like look at what you at your instruction and go, okay, what does this mean? I'm not here to memorize how to be a compassionate person. I'm here to sort of come up with a strategy ahead of time so that when I'm suddenly like, hey, med student, go. I don't know if this happens with med students, but hey, med student, go in and like break the news that they have cancer. Like, for instance, find out what they already know before you jump into, because maybe they already know. Maybe they have no idea what you're about to do. That would affect how you deliver.
Yeah.
Can I just say one more thing? I think I wouldn't be opposed to like having a red flag system where over the years, if people kind of think that a given med student like may need remedial work in terms of showing empathy, then maybe you offer like a side thing for that person or those people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, something constructive. I agree.
The student is a robot.
A robot.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the thing. Laura Quast ridiculed me on our Facebook hosts group this week when I posted this article. And I want to know why, because I don't get it. The NYU School of Medicine says that they may have found a new organ.
The interstitium.
The interstitium, yes. Yeah.
And she's like, come on, Dave, that's clickbait. You know. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's what you guys are here for, to tell me, you know. But why was it? I mean, is this something that everybody knew about? And NYU's just like, yeah, well, screw you. We're going to call it a new organ anyway. You guys don't know.
Where does everybody stand on the interstitium?
You guys took anatomy. You guys know a little bit about.
Did we?
Right. To me, it doesn't seem like a huge deal. We knew it was there.
Yeah.
If you want to call
like
it an organ.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
Blood and organ.
Here's what the study says. The proposed organism should be called the interstitium, which apparently you guys already knew was a word, right?
Yeah.
So it's not new thing. It's a network of fluid-filled spaces just about everywhere in the body, and previously it was thought to be just, you know, some connective tissue. It's been missed because usually examining slides of tissues involves chemically cleaning the tissue in a way that gets rid of all the fluids that were there. It functions like a shock absorber, among many other things, including the fact that it also makes lymph, which explains why cancers that invade this layer spreads more easily, because lymph is important, has its own circulatory system. It, you know, mediates the function of immune cells, right? Am I getting all this right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my question is, why is this a new organ?
How did we miss it?
Why is it a new? Why is it a new? Is it a new organ?
Pluto a planet?
I was totally right. And I have to say, and I've admitted it on the show before, I am sucker for clickbait, big time. So when I'm like new organ, I got to note this down for the Short Code podcast.
I feel like from what you just explained, it's just like a new. Another way of looking at what already existed, it's like a new idea of looking at stuff, like different perspective. I don't know. Is that what they're getting at?
It's the Pluto thing all over again.
Yeah, it is the Pluto thing.
But
it's just like different classification.
Yeah, but I do like the idea of like kind of going back to things and being like, well, this stuff here isn't just taking up space. Like this stuff is important.
Has a functional.
And it's like working with all this other stuff and like kind of like. Calling something an organ is kind of arbitrary in and of itself.
It's like the latest fad biomedical research or something is to call something that we just found that we already knew about an organ.
Yeah.
What was the last one? It was,
When did they start making a case for like skin being like the organ?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Probably. Yeah. That had to happen at some point, right?
Right.
People took skin for granted and they were let's call it an organ.
I totally thought the appendix was an organ until I got here.
It's not?
Is it not? I thought it was just like a little
tail.
Well, I feel
like it's just, to me, it's part of the intestine.
It just wobbles there.
It's just like a dumb little place.
I think, doesn't organ just mean it's composed of like tissues that work together to do something?
Yeah, that's.
It's composed of tissues that work together.
Sure.
So I think an appendix is probably an organ.
That's the definition. Yeah. That's the definition that administrative services coordinators use.
Yeah. I think about like specific little patches of your, like the rest of your intestine, like. Those kind of organs, or their lymphoid tissues. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right, so the general consensus is here that you guys already knew about this thing. It just seems like, you know, they decided to call it an organ, and that's that's the whole basis of this article.
It's my understanding of what's going on here.
We definitely knew about the interstitium.
Yeah, okay. Calling it like new organ like that, and then you have to click. You know, that's clearly like ever. Yeah. It's,
I mean, I hope they got you, clicks.
Gosh, darn it.
Calling
every
it a new
time.
Organ.
Every time.
A little publicity.
I do the same.
Every single time. Like, if you present me with an article about what these celebrities look like now, I will click it. And I don't even give a crap about celebrities. I will click that MF.
Because they say you will not believe.
Yes.
I'm like, oh,
would I? And then I end up going through like 27 slides before I'm like, you know, I'm wasting my time. But I do get almost all the way through the thing.
They got like 27 clicks.
Oh my God.
Speaking of clickbait, I think the award for best headline goes to the BBC headline editor who penned the following. Man has world's worst super gonorrhea. When I read that,
that's
I
incredible.
Now need to know. I mean, this is a terrible thing for this person and for anybody who has whatever this super gonorrhea is. But come on. That's like masterfully blunt.
That is awesome.
Clickbait.
Well,
right
hyperbole.
There.
Yeah.
World's worst.
He crushed
I mean,
that
like,
headline,
like
yeah.
Honey, you know, we haven't had sex yet. But I feel I'm duty bound to tell you that I have the world's worst super.
The world's worst.
The world's worst super.
Worst. Not super competition.
End of relationship. Yeah, the man had a regular partner in the UK. He contracted the disease after having sex with a woman in Southeast Asia. So, you know, antibiotics haven't worked to treat the disease. It's thought to be the first time a gonorrhea infection has been so resistant to common and specialized antibiotics. But
hey, he should have tried anti-buttocks to start.
That's true. Right.
Nice.
Thank you. Buttocks don't affect me.
Gonorrhea is scary, man.
Well, it can be deadly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, not usually, but if it spreads to like the blood or whatever, you're screwed.
Interstitium.
To the interstitium.
Interstitium.
Yeah. Save the
man,
interstitium.
That's in your
the
interstitium.
New organ.
If it gets there, then it's over.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to again highlight my clickbait tendencies in an effort maybe to eliminate my problem. If I keep pointing it out, maybe I'll learn. I may be a lay person though when it comes to medicine, but here's a pro tip from me, Dave Etler, not a doctor. You can't get medicine in the paint aisle at your local hardware store. It's not there. So don't go there. In a bit of bullshit that makes Gwyneth Paltrow and Jenny McCarthy look like MD PhDs, Tiffany Haddish, a comedian and actress who is apparently famous, but I've never heard of her before, but I will still look at an article that tells me what she looks like someday.
Okay, yeah.
She has recently said that she drinks turpentine as a cure-all. She was interviewed in GQ and told the reporter, quote, a teaspoon of turpentine will not kill you. The government doesn't want you to know that if you have a cold, just take some turpentine with some sugar or castor oil or honey, and it'll go away the next day.
Makes me totally want to look up turpentine, honestly.
Why in the world would the government not want us to know if turpentine cures the common cold? This argument makes no sense to me. Like, one estimate says that the U.S. economy loses about $40 billion in productivity and other costs. Now, only $3.3 billion of that is spent on over-the-counter and prescription remedies, which means that you could say that, you know, $36.7 billion are lost just to productivity alone.
Yeah.
Maybe these numbers may be bullshit, but billions of dollars, you know, they think the government would be like, hey, you know what? If you take some turpentine, we'll have more money.
Yeah. And the other reason that makes no sense is because there's no like antivirals that are good for common cold. You know, that's one of those things you have to wait out. So if that was the solution, Big Pharma would have already taken advantage of that and you'd be able to buy that at pharmacies.
Yeah.
Because there's no market for that right now.
Maybe NyQuil's paying them hush money.
Paying who?
The government for the turpentine people. I don't know.
Haddish says she learned about the benefits of turpentine by watching the respected medical journal YouTube. On taking her first dose, she said everything just felt so much better because she was drunk on
some
turpentine.
Some poisons are great.
Yeah. She also says,
now, try weed, lady.
Yeah. She also points out in the GQ article that it will have give you the best doo-doo of your f-ing life.
Oh my God.
So there are people who, and you know, I may be among them, who believe that, you know, having a good BM is important.
Mm. Yeah. It's probably because from, because it's oil based. Isn't it just oil? What's turpentine? Sorry.
It's extracted from like pine tar. From pine tar is what I've read.
Okay. Like, yeah, because it cleans like paintbrushes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of those are like kind of oil based, aren't they? And that's probably the reason why you're having a huge BM. It's, you know, it's
not huge.
I don't know. I'm so curious now.
Awesome.
And you can say the same thing about alcohol, but it's not.
Right.
Like,
it's not doing you anything good, you know?
It's not.
Yeah.
Headache, sleeplessness, coughing, bleeding in the lungs, vomiting, kidney damage, brain damage, coma, and death are all side effects of drinking turpentine. So, I don't know. Seems like
legit.
So the jury's still out.
Careful.
Amazing BMs on the one hand.
Your mileage may vary. Which brings me to this week's challenge. Before today's show started, I had each of you choose from a cup slips of paper, which had on them names of various noxious substances that will injure or kill you if you use them for negative purposes. I gave you the chance to look up their effects on the human body. Your job is to take those effects and discuss with me, a reporter for Dumbass Magazine, how these side effects will make it a good thing for you that the government doesn't want you to know about. Now, just to be clear to our listeners, humans should never consume these things under any circumstances for any reason.
Our lawyers made us say that.
That's right. Our lawyer is definitely very strenuous about that. Not even for a poorly thought out teenage YouTube challenge should you do this. All right. Are you ready? Okay. Claire, let's start with you. What was your substance?
Before we even go, I just want to say as an aside, like one of my favorite things that people always bring up in these is like the government doesn't want you to know.
Yeah.
And like the picture in my head of the current administration having
our government's
sort of
running so smoothly.
Not confident enough to like
that they're able to hatch plans. That is my number one reason.
Such amazing secrets
true.
Being held.
Never. My favorite aphorisms is, you know, never ascribe to conspiracy what can be explained by incompetence. So the corollary being government's too stupid really to come up with this.
It's like too complex.
What was your chemical that you chose?
I had hydrochloric acid.
Used for cleaning brick and toilet bowls. Corrosive on human tissue. Concentrated forms can create acidic mists, which sounds great. It can also blind you and burn layers of your skin.
It happens.
Yeah. So how is
all
this
all fun things do.
But that sounds good for me.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, so I'm under
Yahoo
Answers.
Wait a minute, I'm supposed to be the skeptic here.
My research is under Yahoo Answers, and I'm under the question, and I'm trying to read this with the inflection that's put in there with different capital letters. Can you drink hydrochloric acid without dying? It's misspelled. Dying. So some very intelligent people said, you're going to die anyway. Like no matter what, and it all matters.
No matter what you do.
Yeah. So might as well.
It's an excellent point.
Roll the dice.
Go out in your own way.
And the consensus on Quora and Yahoo, my reliable sources, says it seems that people are always in a battle about what's the concentration, which is a valid question.
Yeah.
Or if it's like neutralized ahead of time.
Because, you know, poison is a lot of, it's mostly about dosage or partially about dosage, right?
Yeah. So, but let's assume we're going to drink straight acid because that's the only fun way to consume poison. Period.
Well, would it help me in some way, Claire?
I think it will. So your stomach actually does contain hydrochloric acid. However, your mouth and your esophagus don't.
Oh.
So it's really good.
I hadn't thought of that.
For making your esophagus more like your stomach and that maybe you can just bleed straight
make
into
your stomach. Yeah.
Some
people provide an easier route for life-giving blood to get to your esophagus.
Yeah, I think it like purges the toxins of your esophagus.
Oh yeah.
It also a juice cleanse, I'm sure, would also do that. Maybe you could do a juice acid cleanse.
Yeah.
To really purge those impurities.
Okay.
Burn your tonsils out. You don't need them.
Okay. I'm a believer.
Who needs teeth?
I'm a believer. I bet it will also cure gingivitis.
I bet it will. Yeah.
It will. It will.
Yeah.
The government doesn't want you to know, Dave.
Yeah. I know.
Somewhere Donald Trump is sitting at a desk going, number one thing, make number sure one Dave priority. Doesn't find out.
It's a governmental priority. All right. I'm convinced. Eric, what did you get?
I got nitrobenzene.
Nitrobenzene. It's a chemical found in floor and furniture polishes. Common side effects include anemia, liver and kidney damage, and increased heart rate. That doesn't sound good.
But
oh,
it smells like almonds.
Oh.
That's a good one.
So, I mean, you guys...
Freshens your breath. That's what
exactly. Or if, you know, you were drinking almond milk in your coffee and you were worried that, you know, the almond industry is, you know, bad for the environment, switch to nitrobenzene.
Very interesting.
And it's a superfood.
Same kind of effect.
It's a superfood. I would think the increased heart rate would be good for you, too, just because keep that blood flowing.
Yeah, you just want...
Clean the toxins.
You gotta get up and go. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing more get up and go than a little nitrobenzene.
Honestly, that's a kick.
Right.
A little light snack before my next test.
Yeah. Exactly. And, I mean, it's also good as a solvent for electrophiles. So if, you know, electrons are negative, and if you're a positive person...
opposites attract.
You see...
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Right, it's a yin and yang.
Yep. Nitrobenzene.
It's an aphrodisiac. Right. electrons.
Okay. Very good.
It's my pitch.
Very good. The government really should release this information.
I mean, yeah. Well, it's the hush money.
Yeah. Dabin, what was yours?
I had bleach.
Oh. And well, everybody knows about bleach. It's used in various household laundry and cleaning products.
Right.
Side effects include a gagging sensation, pain in the mouth and throat, burns in the esophagus, chest pain, low blood pressure, slow heartbeat, delirium, coma, shock, vomiting.
All that.
Yeah.
But like,
those are all good things.
Right. Think about how clean you get after you wash your clothes with bleach.
Yeah.
You know, it's just whitening effect. It's just amazing. So you'll have.
So if you.
You'll have a flawless
skin. White and hate your skin.
On. Yeah. It's very good for dermatological purposes.
Uh-huh.
Because it's...
Do they use actual... what is bleach? It's like sodium hypochlorite.
Yeah, sodium hypochlorite.
They don't use that in dermatology. They use some sort of fancy medical bleach.
Probably not, yeah. But there is a procedure called skin bleaching. Yeah. I've heard of it.
But bleach...
Same as Sosa. Google it.
Bleach is cheaper.
Bleach is cheaper, yeah. So it's very good, like, try at your home kind of thing. Mm. No one has bleach. And it also is good for your cleansing your GI tract because it's very good at killing... bacteria and stuff, you know, that's why we use it to clean toilet, which your GI tract is basically your toilet. So
that is a really good point. I'm sick of digestive system being like a toilet.
So it cleans out all the bad bacteria in your system. So I think it's government should release that information.
Yeah. Besides, I don't need all of that excess stomach line. It just adds to like weight.
Yeah,
I agree.
You know, like it makes me overweight, makes me bloated to
that's
have all that.
That's the last pounds that you, it's really hard to.
Major injury.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and
the
then
mucosa,
bleach would just do the trick.
It'll take you right over the edge. Beach bod.
Right.
All right. Bleach all right. bod. Very good. I'm convinced. Gabe, what did you get?
So I'm going to talk to you about formaldehyde, Dave.
That's an embalming fluid.
Yes.
Right?
Yep,
preservative. Coma and death due to respiratory failure.
Okay.
Drinking it can also cause convulsions, intense pain in the mouth and stomach, nausea, vomiting, signs of shock, vertigo, stupor, and diarrhea.
Diarrhea, fake news. All the other things you said is true, but diarrhea, actually, I think diarrhea is something you'd expect as well. But anyways.
The government apparently wants me to have diarrhea. That's all I'm going to say.
I will say the feds don't want you to know that both methanol and formaldehyde are in you right now.
Oh,
okay.
What?
Whoa. Normal products of cellular metabolism.
Metabolism.
Metabolism. Metabolism.
Clickbait.
Okay, so let's get that out of the way.
Dave discovers new word.
It's already in our body.
Anyways, it works by replacing the water in the water in your cells, and kind of like it cross-links proteins and makes things more stiff.
Oh.
So I'm not advocating for drinking a lot of this stuff, because I do see that about 30 milliliters might kill you.
Oh, that's but not very much.
You drink enough of anything, it might kill you.
That's
okay?
True.
Let's talk about
you
that.
You drink a lot of water, it'll kill you.
It'll kill you.
Yeah.
That's true.
So what I'm saying is kind of just like target it. If you want to stiffen up your stomach a little bit, drink 10 milliliters.
That's not where I thought you were going with that, but okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can make a lot of things stiff, all
right? That's right.
Whatever you want stiff, we will inject just like topically.
Do you mean
transdermal?
Yeah, you could probably.
Is that what you're implying?
No.
Is formaldehyde absorbed through the skin? Because you could just soak it in there, whatever it is.
Yeah, maybe. Listen.
Or add a little to your bath water, and then you'll have the whole stiff body, which is,
No more need for Botox.
Right. Yeah.
Frozen in time.
Cheap, all those clean, and easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And formaldehyde is used as like a tissue preservative in like labs, right?
Yeah.
They use it all the time.
Rub a little under your eyes to prevent those bags.
If you don't want to get old.
Yeah. If you don't want to get old, die immediately.
Preserve your current body. I don't know.
All right.
It's a health wonder.
Yeah. All right. I think it's worth repeating again. Don't do any of these things. I don't know. Why should I have to tell our audience, an educated audience, that you shouldn't do these things? But I feel like I have to. I feel it's my duty, my obligation as a human being. For links to... So that's our show. That's our show. I want to thank you for helping me figure these things out today. For links to the topics... on today's show, you can visit the episode show notes at theshortcut.com. But for now, Gabe, Claire, Dabin, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for making us part of your week. If you like what you heard today, it would be real nice if you leave us a review in your Apple Podcast app. Reviews help us come to the attention of other listeners who might benefit from our show. It's unlikely. If you don't like what you heard today, let us know and why, and we will talk about that, because we like to talk about things. Or if you have a suggestion for something we should talk about or seek barely informed sleep deprived advice, you can send those things to theshortcoats@gmail.com, or you can leave us a message at 347-SHORT-CT. Show, as always, is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government and ongoing support from the Writing and Humanities program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by Catmosphere. Talk to you in 1 week.